She's now 2 years old. She was the one riding around in the great cart Toby was pushing around. Sweet little Olivia. All right. Infants. That's the heading we're looking at. External locus of control is the official name. Don't worry about learning that one. But when we were infants, it was developmentally appropriate for us to view the world as the adults having all the control and power, which is called the external locus of control, as opposed to the internal locus of control, which is the control and power residing within ourselves. So we're talking about how we view the world out here as an infant. For example, when I was an infant, it was often true that the pain I experienced was caused by someone else's failure. For example, somebody forgot to change my diaper. Somebody forgot to feed me. Somebody forgot that I was cold and I needed a blanket, or et cetera, right? That was appropriate and true because I had no control. Everybody had to do everything for me. It was also true that it was someone else's responsibility to fix a problem. I couldn't feed myself. I couldn't change my diaper. I couldn't make sure I was warm. I couldn't meet my emotional needs. I couldn't have that smile that a baby needs. Somebody's glad to be with them. And so it was all, and it was usually true that my only responsibility was to express my unhappiness by crying and then wait for someone to do something to make me feel better. That's why I'm going to do a little bunny trail here. There's a parenting method called cry it out, where you just let the baby cry it out and you don't go in and meet their needs. I just see, when I understanding the brain formation of an infant, that's so harmful for a baby's brain, because that's where we are forming our secure attachments, and it's based on somebody coming and meeting our needs. And when a baby cries, they are telling us something. And they're not, I remember my mom telling me that I was going to spoil my two girls. And Lord told me one time, he said, it's impossible to spoil a baby, an infant. And I went, oh, okay, good. You know, all right. So my mom would tell me, you're spoiling them. No, Mom, God said. She didn't believe that God could speak, so she ignored me. But anyway, so when a baby cries, a baby's telling you something's wrong. They may just want interaction. Remember, babies are looking in your left eye, and they're downloading. First of all, they're downloading your brain. Whoever the primary caretaker is, that baby actually downloads the parent, the primary caregiver's brain. And if that mama, which is usually the primary caretaker, is full of fear or anger or whatever, that baby's going to download that program. And that baby will, unless the Lord intervenes and they do something to change it, will be filled with fear for the rest of their life. That's what happened to me. I mean, fear's been the thing I've battled my whole life. And when I was asking my mom about what was going on when she was pregnant with me and that first year of my life, which is when all this happens, is the first year, she lived in constant fear. And that was the time when I was 6 weeks old, and my dad came in and asked my mom for a divorce because he'd gotten a 16-year-old girl pregnant and he wanted to marry her. And my mom had been living in that constant fear the whole time she was pregnant, because my dad didn't try to hide his affairs. He didn't care. So anyway, and then that whole, right after that, my dad flew into a rage and tried to choke my mom. And she called the police and et cetera. So he was in the Marines. He got shipped off to Hawaii and overnight. to keep him out of jail. And so my mom was left with three children for 3 years. My dad was gone, trying to survive. She lived in constant fear of not having enough money. She said that pretty much the only food we had to eat were potatoes. And then I was a year old, I got polio. I mean, it was just one thing after the other. My mom, bless her, that she had to put up with. So, and I know that's why that whole fear downloaded her brain and that whole fear thing, even in the womb. So, the last thing about an infant is an infant also, it's also understood that I would become increasingly upset if somebody didn't come and fix the problem soon. Those are all normal, natural responses from an infant. And that behavior feels accurate and appropriate, right, in the present. But here's the problem. When a situation triggers an adult into those implicit memories of being an infant where you cried and nobody came and helped you and you were left in your upset, and that triggers as an adult and you respond with those implicit feelings, emotions coming forward, that's not appropriate for an adult to react to a situation like a one-year-old or one-month-old, right? So when that happens to an adult, let's just say Bob gets triggered, his implicit memories from not being attuned to as an infant comes forward, it will feel intensely true that it's Bob's responsibility to figure out how to help me feel better and how to fix the problem. It will feel intensely true that it's reasonable for me to simply wait for Bob to do his job or wait for the person to do their job to fix me. If I get triggered, I'm Bobette. If I get triggered, I love my brain. And I get triggered back to a one-month-old that expects everybody else to take care of me, then I'm going to expect, I'm going to quit picking on you, Marie, because I think I might be triggering some people that I'm picking on you so much. So, I'll just pick on Mary for a little while now. You're next, Mary. Sign up. Everybody can do a sign-up sheet if you're safe for me to pick on. So so I have this implicit memory. I get triggered because I have a need, and Mary didn't meet that need, and that just triggers me all the way back to one-month-old because I expect her to make sure I'm comfortable. I want her to make sure my needs are met, and if she doesn't do it, then that's not right. She's to blame because that's her responsibility. You see how that's a problem when an adult triggers back to an infant? And for me, it's going to feel intensely true that it's reasonable for me to simply wait for Mary to do her job. And it will feel intensely true that it's reasonable for me to become increasingly upset with Mary if the problem isn't solved in a timely fashion. And I won't have any idea what's actually going on. It will just feel so right and true and just to me that I feel this way and that Mary's all to blame because if she'd just do her job, I'd be just fine. Now I'm 68 years old, for a 68-year-old woman to react that way is not reasonable, right? Now, if I was 1 month old, absolutely. It's nobody looks at baby Benjamin back there and thinks that's ridiculous that he's crying because he's hungry or he needs his diaper changed, right? But now if he was 30 years old and he's crying because he needs his diaper changed, Or he needs his supper. It's 30 minutes late. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I can remember early on in my marriage, I expected Danny. I always said he was my knight in shining armor. He rescued me, and he did. But I expected him to meet my needs. I would often trigger back to that little baby that, like I said yesterday, my mom never held us when she fed us. Well, I can't say never, but it was rare. And the reason I know that for a fact is I was 5 and a half when my sister was born, and I was 12 and a half when my next sister was born, and I watched her prop that bottle in that crib, change the diaper, prop the bottle, leave the baby, never burp the baby. She didn't have any emotional connection. And she, when I asked her about it one time, that was what she told me. She said, well, I don't want to spoil my babies. I said, you do that with me and all of it? Yeah. I don't want to spoil my babies. Somehow she got that belief in her head that holding them, cuddling them, us, would spoil them. And that was, in her mind, spoiling babies was the worst thing you could do. So, and that's why when I had mine, she kept telling me, you're going to spoil them, you're going to spoil them. It was just a thing with her. So, thankfully, I didn't listen. So, anytime a situation in the present includes an interaction with a person who triggers those beliefs or emotions or choices, you're going to see that person, if that person's me and anybody else doesn't meet my needs, then I'm going to trigger. And I'm going to flip back to that baby, and I'm going to point and blame and expect you to take care of me. It's a welfare spirit when you have it as an adult. When you're that way as a baby, it's the way it's supposed to be. It's the way God designed it, but not as an adult. And this pattern of behavior can apply to the Lord, where we expect the Lord to do it all. Just fix me. You know, where we sit on our recliner with our chocolate chip cookies and milk, red eggs, and expect him to do all the work. Boy, did I picture that chocolate chip cookie real fast. I can even smell it coming out of the oven. Ugh. Okay, I love apples, and strawberries are my favorite. Well, you're kind of sliding down the scale there, Sally. Anyway. What's that?
Broccoli.
Oh, that's way down the line. So, chia pudding I love, yes. Okay, good. Well, I'm all good now. I just filled in a rut in my brain. You know that I was talking about the rut yesterday. I'm talking about a physical anatomy in your brain. It's called a neuron pathway. You actually have anatomy in your brain for these habits that you have. So that's why you have to change the anatomy in order to change the habit. And again, we'll talk a lot about that tomorrow, Lord willing, and we have enough time. So, triggered thoughts and emotions from implicit memories and verbal logical explainer. I've been using the VLE, so some at lunch, what is that VLE again? Verbal logical explainer. Verbal because you actually hear the thoughts in your head. And logical because that's the point of it, is to bring logic into the situation that makes no sense. It's going to bring logic in there and sort it out for you and explain the whole scenario. Mm-hmm. Primarily, number one, to protect you. And number two, you have to blame somebody else in order to justify yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's that. VLE, that verbal logical explainer, will create a story. It's confabulated. It's made up. That's what confabulated means. I actually like that word, so I like to say it instead of made up. It just rolls off my tongue real well. Confabulated. Now, if I ever blooper that one, oh, boy, that'll be fun. Confabulated stories, right? They aren't true. They're made up. And it's to defend yourself. Justify your actions. So all of those things together, the triggered thoughts, the emotions, the implicit memory that comes up, and your verbal logical explainer, confabulations, will feel true, intensely true. They're going to come with a lot of emotion from that implicit memory, most likely. And will feel so true to you in the present that you will feel justified to behave toward others in inappropriate manners and hurtful ways. This often results in lack of openness. You won't be able to hear any input from other people. Lack of insight. Sense of entitlement. You deserve to be upset because Mary didn't meet my needs. So I have a right to cry like a baby. I have a right to complain. I have a right to talk about her to Christy over here. And also, you won't be able to apologize because you believe you are fine. Mary has the problem. You see how all this works? So when you find yourself blaming somebody, put the brakes on, stop, go. Now, what was that Rhonda said about VLE, you know, implicit memories? Because that's a sign when you're blaming. First of all, we're not supposed to do that because that's pointing your finger. Isaiah 58:6 says, if you will stop pointing your finger, if you will refuse to point your finger at somebody else, then Yahweh, I'm going to come in and I'm going to take away your depression and I'm going to cause the sun to just break out over you and give you. It's amazing. And it's true. It works. It happens. So, all right. If this is your spouse or close friend or the Lord, it can and usually will create separation or distance, emotional separation, sometimes even physical. You know, if you believe these confabulations and implicit memories and all that comes in that package deal and you blame somebody else, it's going to create some separation. It's going to create some distance, depending on how severe your triggers are. As an older child, it's appropriate and developmentally normal to ask for help when you aren't able to solve a problem or complete a task. That's normal. In doing so, it's healthy for that child to believe an adult will help them. It's normal for that child to wait for the adult to figure out what kind of help is needed and then do it. That's normal. That's healthy. The problem comes when I'm an adult and I get triggered because Mary didn't meet my needs. She didn't show up on time. I asked for her help and she said, well, hold on, wait a minute. And I'm like, no, my diaper needs changing right now, you know. So unknowingly, content from my past as an older child can get triggered forward as implicit memory, causing me to believe that other people or the Lord should figure out my problems and fix them, be the solution to my problems. When this happens, it will feel intensely true to me, if I'm triggered like this, that I've done everything I'm able to do for myself, and the problem is too big for me, so I've asked for help, and now it's the other person's responsibility or the Lord's responsibility to give me the help that I need and fix my problem. And if they don't do it, if Mary doesn't do it in a timely manner, it will feel intensely true to me that it's reasonable for me to become increasingly upset with Mary. And we do this often. And sometimes we don't do it out loud. We do it in our head, especially with our spouses. And we judge them and we accuse them and we blame them for our discomfort. The truth is, if we believe we are stuck because the Lord or other people aren't giving us the help we believe we need, and that it's their, and we believe that it's their responsibility to identify and resolve my problems, then that will prevent us from being able to receive the help that they're actually offering us. If I feel dependent and helpless, and if I choose to wait passively for Mary or whoever to deal with my problems, then I won't own my responsibility as an adult. And I won't ask the Lord to show me what I need to do differently in order to discover what's blocking me. It's a big deal. And it's important that we recognize that we're doing that. We're spending a lot of time on this verbal logical explainer because it is a problem. And we were talking at our table about how it actually began in the garden. Adam and Eve's VLE got triggered instantly. And they respond, Eve responded immediately to the serpent in her VLE. And the serpent is telling her how wonderful this tree of the knowledge of good and evil is and what it'll do for her if she'll just eat from it. And then Eve gets deceived, and her deception allows her VLE to tell her a story. Her verbal logical explainer tells her, yeah, that tree, that's what she says, the tree looks good. She looked, she thought, yeah, it looks good for food. Yeah, and it's going to make me wise. You know, they're going to be like God, and they'll know the difference between good and evil. And she tells herself a story. Her VLE is operating. And so she eats, and Adam eats. He's standing there with her. He watches the whole deal, and he eats as well. Then they recognize we're in trouble. Because all of a sudden, now they recognize they're naked. They didn't know that before. Because innocent children don't know they're naked. A two-year-old could come running through here butt naked. Oops, can I say that? Stark naked. And it's on the video. Oh, well. It's anatomy. It's anatomy. Completely naked, and nobody think anything about it, right? Because they're innocent. Adam and Eve was like that. They were innocent. But then there comes a time you let a 14-year-old come running through here naked, and we got a streaker. And that's a whole different situation, right? That was Adam and Eve's situation. All of a sudden, they know better. They didn't know better before. Now they know better. Because now they know better, their VLE pops up in their brain and tells them a story. And the first thing they recognize is, uh-oh, we got to cover ourselves. Get some fig leaves, sew them together. So this wasn't just like a 30-minute ordeal after the fall. Some time had passed, a few hours at least, where they're sewing some little aprons together, and I don't know where they got the needle or the thread or the, I don't know, but they figured it out. And so then Yahweh shows up in the garden and says, where are you? Well, he doesn't need an answer. He knew already. And Adam responds, I'm going to paraphrase this whole story. So Adam responds, I heard you walking in the garden, and I was afraid. First time he'd ever felt fear, ever. And, I mean, he slept with the lions and tigers and bears, oh my. And so that tickled me. So he feels fear because he knows. And his verbal logical explainer is working. Yahweh says, I was afraid because I'm naked. And Yahweh says, who told you you were naked?
Yeah.
Right? And Adam responds, that woman? There it is. The VLE, blaming, pointing a finger. That woman, here he goes, that you, Yahweh, gave me, you're to blame too. That woman gave me the fruit, the woman you gave me. And I ate. Now, Eve's brain's working too. So he turns his attention to Eve, to the woman. And she says, the serpent deceived me, and I ate. Eve owned it. Adam didn't. Eve said, yeah, I did it. But the reason I did it, there's her VLE, she defended herself, is because a serpent deceived me, tricked me. So that's all VLE stuff. We were talking at the table, were we born with a VLE or did it come as a result of the fall? We don't know. We don't know. But I know one thing, the VLE has no conscience when it comes to lying. That's part of what it uses. It lies to you. Just like it lied to Eve and lied to Adam. No, not Adam. Adam knew what he was doing. But lied to Eve for sure. So it doesn't matter whether we were created or it was a result of the fall, because our brains were affected by sin. Your brain, Adam and Eve's brain, was different before the fall. And as a result of the fall, their soul, mind, will, and emotions rose up in place of their dead spirit and began to live this life. And from that point on, Adam and Eve drug around a dead spirit. I like to view the spirit as like a balloon. Your spirit's like a balloon, and it has the breath of Yahweh in it. And Yahweh, Yeshua, and the Holy Spirit live inside your spirit if you're saved. And but once Adam and Eve sinned, their spirit was dead. The breath of Yahweh was no longer there, because he said, you will surely die. And so their spirit died that day. And all they had left to live by was their soul. Every friend that you have that's not a believer in Christ, their spirit's deflated. It's dead. It's empty. It's empty. And all they have is their mind, will, and emotions to function by. So why are we surprised when they do stupid things? Or when they mistreat us? Or when they lie to us or betray us? It's all they have, right? So, yeah. Okay, where are we in my notes? That was a little fun bunny trail. Did I finish that page? Okay, yeah, down to attunement. We talked about attunement yesterday really quickly because it's such a big deal. I'll go over it again. We talk about relational circuits in your brain, right, the nucleus accumbens, and how triggers, trauma, et cetera, shut off your ability to access your relational circuits. And when your relational circuits are shut down, you don't have the ability to be relational. You'll flip over to your left brain, which is where all your logic and reasoning and mental processing happens, pretty much. And that's really true for men, especially. Now, women, when they get triggered, often they trigger to their right hemisphere. Their relational circuits are shut down, but they're in their right hemisphere, which is where all bunch of your emotions are. You know, and you have lots of them, and when you're triggered, you usually use them all, often. You know, where men want to fix it, we feel it. Yeah, and so it's quite the dynamic and the differences in our brain. So attunement is the one thing, the main thing, that will help someone who's shut down, so to speak, whose relational circuits have gone offline. That's what we need in order to help somebody get their relational circuits back online so that they can access the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere of their brains. We're meant by Yahweh, designed to live out of both hemispheres of our brain at the same time. We're supposed to be, that's called our thinking brain. But then when we get triggered, we drop down to our emotional or logic brain, depending on male or female. And if you're really triggered, you drop all the way down to your core brain, your fight, flight, or freeze brain, your action. It's called your action brain. But we're not meant to live in our action brain. That's meant for emergency situations. The building's on fire. We got to get out of here and put the fire out, something like that. And you drop down. Then you get right back up to your thinking brain. Same with our emotional logic brain. We're not meant to stay there. Some people live there their whole lives. It's very hard on your body because we're not designed to live there. We're meant to live in our thinking brain where we have access to left and right hemisphere. The left hemisphere is where you store all your Bible verses and all your Bible truths. So if you're a woman and you get triggered and you flip over to your right hemisphere, your brain, and some man comes along and starts telling you how you should be thinking right now or feeling or giving you those Bible scriptures, and if you're super triggered, you're going to throw that Bible at him. You know, because all you can do is feel. You don't have access to that truth. And that's why you can tell somebody all day long that Yahweh loves them or that he's with you or he cares, or and you're triggered and you can't access that truth because you're in your right brain. It's a big deal to be able to help somebody that's in trauma be able to get out of that place, either left or right brain. And that's why, you know, it's not helpful for men that are triggered and they're in their left brain and us feeling women come along and try to tell them how to feel. They don't care how to feel right now. They don't, that isn't even in their radar. And they just want to fix it. And I'll tell you what else a man wants to do. He wants to open a drawer in his brain, put that problem in it, shut the drawer, put a lock on it if need be, and walk away and never think about it again. Women, you know, I've talked about this before. Men's brain look more like a filing cabinet. You know, they've got a little slot for one memory, one event, and then the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And they don't want to ever have to open that drawer again. And so when we come along and say, honey, remember when the dog got ran over or whatever, whatever? You know, and they're like, yeah, I remember. Well, da-da-da-da-da. Why are we thinking about that? Let's not think about it. And they go back to their whatever. They just don't ever see any reason to rehash it or rehearse it or bring up a problem. And us women, on the other hand, our brains are more like a treasure chest. I call it a treasure chest, not a trunk, but a treasure chest. Right. And we open the lid. If we ever close it, it's usually not closed. And we just put every memory, every event, all our emotions, all our opinions and beliefs, we put it in that treasure chest, one on top of the other, all here, there, no order, no, it's just there. And then somebody says, hey, do you remember when 10 years ago we went wherever, wherever, and we went to the beach and we had that family vacation and we're like, oh, where's that at? Where's that at? Okay, let's dig through. Oh, yeah, let's see. 5 years ago, I remember when we went to da-da-da-da-da, and you're still, oh, and 7 years ago, we went to da. You know, and we just have this whole two-hour-long conversation before we finally get to the memory of 10 years ago, because our brains are, that's how we're made. And we've got all the feelings and all the emotions wrapped all up in each one of those files that we bump into on our way to find that 10-year-old memory. And here we are trying to tell our husband, and he's saying, I just wanted to ask you about when we went to the beach 10 years ago. You know, can you tell me what the name of that place was we stayed at? That's all I want to know. And it's impossible. We can't get there yet. You know, Danny's laughing so hard because he knows this is, I got a big treasure chest full of, yeah, stuff. And he's like, typical man. Just give me the facts. Anyway, it's true. So, oh, that's right. Men have a nothing box in their brain. They do. Some women do. I know someone, it's a woman that does. It's unusual for a woman to have a nothing box. But men, all men, I think, have one. And it's real. they really can go to a place where they're not thinking. Now, us women, if you've been married very long, you know that's true. What were you thinking? Nothing. I remember going down the road one day. We'd gone maybe a couple of hours, and he hadn't said a word. And I'm over there like, can we just talk about something? I got a whole trip. And finally, I said, honey, what are you thinking about? He said, nothing. I said, no. You got to be thinking about something. What are you thinking about? Nothing. I said, are you like thinking about something that doesn't mean anything? Is that what you mean? He said, no, I'm literally thinking about nothing. I said, like, you don't have any words going through your head. I couldn't believe this. This was a while back. He said, no, I don't. I said, that's not possible. Yeah, I don't ever remember my brain not talking to me, right? And he really has a nothing box. He also has a button, talking button, where when that thing gets pushed, he can talk for 2 hours and not take a breath. And I'm just like, who are you? Where did you come from? It's bizarre. It's like he saved up all his words for a week and then use them out. It's so interesting. And I'll go, oh, his talking button got pushed. There he is. And you can't interrupt him. That's not good because he just has to start all over. And I learned, nope, just let him tell the story and don't interrupt or I get to hear it all again. And it's so fun. It's just the difference. It's different for each of us. And Yahweh knew that. And iron sharpens iron. And we get to have grace for each other and enjoy each other and learn to laugh. And anyway. Okay. Attunement. Oh, that's where we're at. Wow. So attunement, if I offer you attunement, let's say Mary's triggered, and I know you can tell when somebody's triggered, and I know she's triggered. She's either going to become a possum, a predator. We talked about that yesterday, predatory actions and possum actions, and I see it. So I'm her friend. I love her. So I'm going to try to help her get out of that upset. And the best thing I can do for her is attune to her. And what that means is I'm going to communicate primarily with my body that I see you. Okay, I can see that. I'm going to use those 19 relational skills that's able to use mind sight and recognize, ooh, she's hurting. I see you. I hear what you're saying, because if she's speaking, and if she's not verbally, she's speaking with her body. So I'm not going to say this. I'm going to be saying it with my body language. I hear you. I correctly understand your emotional upset right now. I might not agree with it. I don't have to agree with it, but I understand it, right? And I join you in your emotions. And I genuinely care about you. And that's what I'm glad to be with you. That's the, of all of those things, if you leave out that last one, I'm glad to be with you, you can forget it. Because that is belonging. That's the number one need we all have, is I'm glad to be with you. Even though you're upset, even though you don't like me right now, I'm still glad to be with you. And I communicate that with my body language. That means I'm not looking around the room while she's sitting there, especially if she's talking to me. And I'm not going over here, and I'm not checking my cell phone. Ooh, no. I'm like eyes on. I'm leaning towards her. I'm soft. My body's soft. I'm not taking an aggressive stand at all. My face, my countenance is expressing to her that I care and that I feel for her. And if there's some kind of history between us that's good, she's most likely going to be able to receive that. And I know she would. So, and then as a result of me communicating that to her, her brain is going to tell her, okay, you're safe. You can relax. It's okay. She gets you. And it will turn your relational circuits back on. Don't try to be in a relationship with somebody or interact with somebody whose relational circuits are shut off. You're wasting your time. It won't be effective. and it can actually trigger them, because if they're not being relational, they don't want to be relational, and you come in with some strong attunement, you can actually trigger them, and they can look at you and say, leave me alone. Go away. Shut up. I mean, that, yeah, right? So that's part of those relational skills, is not forcing yourself on somebody. When you're reading that message from them that they don't want you to be interacting with them right now, they don't want you near them, they don't like you, they don't want to be with you, a mature gentle protector will take a step back and wait until that person is able to take a step towards you again. Now, if you have a long history and it's your spouse, there might be where you could step in a gentle way. You'll know if you have those relational skills and spiritual maturity when you can step in and when you better not. You know, you don't want to get your hand bit off. And predators, people turn into predators when they're triggered sometimes. They turn into possums when they're triggered sometimes. And sometimes they do both right in front of your face, and you think they have multiple personalities. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, it might not be. They're a possum, and then they flip to be a predator or vice versa and flip all over the place. And you're like, whoa, 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 what's this? And it's self-protection. They're not safe. So our job is to help people feel safe. Make sense? Everybody got it? You know how to help your friends now and yourself when you get triggered. Right, I think so. All right, let's talk about validation and agreement. When a painful event happens, this is normal. This is what Yahweh put in us. This is a good thing. We naturally want other people to validate the difficulty of our situation. We want them to agree with our assessment of what happened. That's human nature. Sometimes grief, especially tragedy, we need to tell the story. It's part of how your brain processes the pain, by telling the story. And we might need to tell you the story 10 times every time we see you. And the worst thing you can do is say, you already told me. The worst thing you can do is say, you've already told me. Don't talk about that again. Just listen, attune. Understand that their brain needs to talk about this and needs to process it. Pain is better processed with company. Now, you might say, but I'm an introvert. I don't like to process with other people. Well, I hate to tell you that Yahweh created you and every single person on this planet to need him and to need other people. It's how he made us. And so, I'll just say what I just heard. So get over it. Recognize that we need each other. Like I talked about yesterday, Yahweh made us to be mutually interdependent. That's his way. And we tend to swing to be independent. And we're not made for that. That's why Adam and Eve sinned. That was what got them in trouble. They wanted to be independent of Yahweh. They wanted the power and the ability to decide for themselves what was good and what was evil. That was the whole root of that whole thing. Especially for Adam, because he wasn't deceived. He wanted that power to decide for himself. Be independent of Yahweh. Before that, if Adam needed knowledge, he had to go to Yahweh. There was no Google. There was no Siri. There was no encyclopedias. I said that one time in a thing, and one of the kids raised their hand and said, what's a encyclopedia? Like, oh, wow. I grew up with encyclopedias, right? And so we are meant to do this life together. Now, if you're an introvert, you're not going to have 10 people in your circle of friends, and that's okay. But I would encourage you to have two, because you need a three family bond that are real close. And you need the two, but you need the three as well to fulfill your identity of people, at least. Now, you find a true-born extrovert, they're liable to have 10 and perfectly happy having 10 people in that circle. Most of them want everybody, whatever that number is that they do life with. They want them all, you know, the more the merrier. And that's the way Yahweh made them, and we need both. You know, and then you've got the ambiverts like me. I'm on the spectrum towards extrovert, but boy, I got to have that alone time to refuel. That's how I refuel. I don't refuel with people. I refuel mostly with me and Yahweh and a couple of friends. But I don't want to do that all the time. You know, I want that bunch of people, but I get times when I have to pull back and pull in. So find out, know yourself. Make sure that's one of the things of a general protector. They know how to take good care of themselves as well as other people, and it's both. So the problem with us, let me just start at the beginning. When a painful event happens, we want others to validate the difficulty of our situation and agree with our assessment of what happened. That's human nature. And that's where attunement's so powerful. You don't have to agree, but boy, you got to agree with the fact that, yeah, this is hurting you. Yeah, you're hurting. Yeah, this is painful. You know, you may not agree with XYZ about what they just said, but you can agree with the fact that they're hurting. The problem with this, because there's a downside to this, is that the present painful triggering event most likely has implicit past memory content mixed in with your perception and brings feelings of the present day event. So if you're triggered and you want to rehearse that thing 10 times, that's different. You know, that's where you, wow, let's go to the Lord and ask him to show us the root of this. But when a trauma, somebody dies that you love, or something, somebody betrays you that you love, let that person have the time they need to process that thing verbally with a safe friend without you saying, man, you've already told me this 10 times. It might take years. It might take years. So I don't think I need to go into super detail on this. This is so obvious, and you're going to read your notebooks. Every one of you, I'm sure, are going to go back and read this. So we've already talked about a lot of that. So let's skip on down now to feeling it is unsafe to acknowledge responsibility. Many of us have had experiences where it wasn't safe to acknowledge that we did something wrong. In my world, my experience, my childhood, it always brought pain. If I admitted that I did something wrong, man, I knew I was going to pay for it. And, you know, I've thought a lot about that. Man, that's so contrary to creating an environment of honesty when you get punished for being honest. And I did. And I learned it was messed up for me. My brain, I remember being thinking about it and thinking, man, if I just lie, I might be able to get by without the pain. Yeah. Sometimes I would, sometimes I wouldn't. I'd lie. And so what that did for me, it created this environment and this belief in me that in order for me to protect myself, I had to lie. Mm-hmm. And it became autopilot. And I'd lie about things that didn't even matter just because it was so like breathing, because it really young. I remember one time, I think this is probably the root of it. The Lord brought this memory up. I wasn't in school yet, so 4 or 5 or so. And again, like I said earlier, I never knew what was going to make my dad angry. And for whatever reason, he came home this particular day, and I had an older brother and sister. And somebody had come in, one of us, and it wasn't me, and wiped their dirty hand, washed their hands, but didn't get them clean, and then dried their hand on the towel, so there was dirt on the towel. And my dad came in, and that just infuriated him. He lined us three kids up. He was in the Marines, so he, like a soldier, like a staff, like one of those boot camp sergeants that get in your face and scream and spit all over your face. He did that thing to us, wanting to know who did it. Well, we were all terrified because we knew what was going to come. So none of us are saying a word. And finally, I just realized, man, somebody's going to take a beating here. So, and I'm tired of standing here. Again, I was four or five. And I just said, I did it. And I didn't, but I lied. I did it. Let's get it over with, was my thinking. And so I got the beating. And then my brother couldn't stand it. He was 2 years older than me. So he came and told on himself that he did it. And so he got the beating. And I'm standing there thinking, what in the world? This is messed up. My VLE was not working. It didn't help me make any sense out of that thing. Right? It shouldn't have happened that way. I told my brother later, that was ridiculous. I already took it. You should have left it. He said, I couldn't. And, you know, we had that whole thing. So there's got to be a better way of raising children to set them up so that they aren't having to self-protect because they're afraid of the consequences. And I'm not going to tell you what that's all up for y'all to figure that one out. But it's got to be a better way. So because that scenario I just talked about, things like that happen often, when as an adult, when anybody suggested that I did wrong or I did something wrong, it would activate that past traumatic reality that I wasn't safe because it's my belief was, and my VLE told me, it's never safe to acknowledge that I did something wrong. And the best thing I can do is lie. That's the rut that was formed in my brain. That made me feel that I wasn't safe in the present day when somebody said you did wrong. And that this person who's telling me I did something wrong is no longer safe. So it just shut me down to constructive criticism. And it took the Lord healing me and showing me this right here so that I could get free of that. And now I love and I welcome. Don't you be a yes person to me. Don't you tell me it's good when it's not. Don't you dare overlook where I'm not being Christ-like. And I value that. I welcome it. I need it. I want it. I'll ask Danny regularly, you see anything in me? How did I do? How did the Lord? What did I could have done better? What, you know, because I want that input from him because he knows me better than anybody. So I found that I would get defensive, and I'm talking, you know, 20 years ago or so. I'd get defensive without even thinking about it, and I'd throw out a VLE confabulated story to defend myself and to blame somebody else because that kept me from taking responsibility for my actions. And that's childlike behavior. That's being childish. I have a saying I say a lot, just own it. Life is so much easier if we will just own it instead of spending all that time and energy to defend yourself. Just own it, you know. And even if you didn't, I know that some people, when they're confronted with behavior that's not Christ-like, their response almost always is, but my heart was right. And, you know, when somebody responds that way, what do you say? You know, it shuts you down to any further growth conversations. Right? And the thing is, we're not always talking about your heart. You got some ruts in your brain that's not right. And so right now we're talking about these patterns of thinking called strongholds, that are also called habits, that we've created that are running on autopilot. You don't even have to think about them. They just automatically happen, kind of like your laptop, your computer has all these programs that are running behind the scenes. You're not even aware that they're running. And you just push a button and there they go and do their thing. That's how your brain is. That's why it's this whole understanding is a big deal, I believe. All right. Most traumatic. Wait, let's see. We got another slide. Don't y'all? Aren't y'all excited to get to look at another slide? That one was great, too. You might want to turn the light out on that one, Greg. That's a good one. You got to take full effect of this. That's what we were just talking about. You're an adult and you act like a child, right?
Yeah.
A baby. Feed me, change my diaper. See how ridiculous? But we act like that. Next time we all do that, we're going to flash that image back up, right? Most traumatic implicit memory and VLE confabulations usually includes the loss of access to our relational connection circuits. That means that almost all of the time when a traumatic implicit memory is accessed, your relational circuits will be offline, and that means you will be brain damaged because you aren't functioning in your whole entire brain. You've got a problem. In order to successfully process a painful experience, we must stay in relational mode. You hear that? If you're going to successfully process a painful experience, you must stay in relational mode even while you're feeling the negative emotions. And that's hard for people to do. We tend to go to beeps. Give me that ice cream and barbecue potato chips, red eggs, apple. I love apples. And you look for a way to numb it, but it won't fix it. It won't heal it. It won't help you be transformed or any of that. Maintaining and staying relational is one of the most important processing tasks. It is critical that we learn as adults. We were supposed to learn it as children. A lot of us didn't. I didn't. We must learn how to experience those six big emotions and stay relational and not withdraw, not go inside. If you're a possum, you're going to go inside. If you're a predator, you're going to lash out and you're going to be pretty diligent to look for somebody else to blame. Possums blame others too. They just do it really quietly. And they build their internal case with their VLE's help. And then at some point, it'll come out in some fashion, some way. So we all do it. And like I said yesterday, we all have predatory moments and we all have possum moments. And different scenarios can elicit the different response in you as to how you respond in the moment. So that means none of us can point our fingers at anybody else because we've all been there and we all do it. And we all are going to extend grace to each other. So, not being able to stay in relational mode is the main reason painful experiences become trauma. Remember what I talked about? Trauma is a painful experience that was not processed. If you process a painful, tragic event, it will not become trauma. And that's the goal, even in the worst case. You know, Job experienced the worst of the worst. I do not believe he experienced trauma. He processed it. His friends tried to process it with him, but that backfired, and he had to set them straight, and quite the scenario. But he certainly processed it with the Lord. Not being able Oh, I just said that. That means in most situations when you're triggered, you're going to fall into non-relational mode. When that happens, you have the challenge of recognizing and acknowledging your traumatic implicit memory and your VLE confabulations without having access to your relational circuits in the present. That's tough. For you to try to process traumatic events without your relational circuits online, it's excruciatingly painful and difficult because we aren't designed for that. We are, I talked about earlier, our brains, our hearts are designed to process pain with other people and with Yahweh. The good news is that when your brain circuits are functioning as Yahweh designed, your spontaneous experience will be to feel relationally connected and feel the desire for that connection. You will experience other people as relational beings rather than an object. You will be aware of others' true hearts. In other words, you may be able to look at them and go, you know what? Yeah, they're flawed. Yeah, they just blew it. But, man, they got a good heart. And I know they didn't mean to hurt me. You'll be able to extend grace to them. You will be concerned about what others are thinking and feeling. You will perceive the presence of others as an emotional resource. And you will experience joy in being together. That's when your relational circuits are online. That's what it feels like. Now, some people live their whole lives with their relational circuits offline. I've known some. It's extremely harmful to your physical health, your emotional health, your spiritual health. And I would encourage you to give yourself a self-test to find out if you're living with your relational circuits off or on. And generally, it's both. And which one are you most often operating out of? Your relational circuits off or on? Because that will help you see how much you need some help, right? To process why that's true. The bad news is that when we get upset, we often temporarily lose access to our relational circuits. And when this happens, your spontaneous experience will include the absence of feeling relationally connected, and you won't even want to be connected. You will not experience others as a relational being. You will not be aware of each other's true hearts. You will not feel concern or compassion regarding what the other person is thinking and feeling. And you will not experience joy in being together. Furthermore, when you lose access to your relational connection circuits in the context of being upset with a friend or family member, instead of perceiving that that person's presence is an emotional resource, you will perceive him or her as a problem and as an adversary. Since this is critical, one of the most valuable things you can do when you're upset is to find out if your relational circuits are online. This is something you can learn to do. So here's some questions, and I would encourage you to get a little 3x5 card, write these out, because remember what I said yesterday, if you handwrite something, your brain knows you want to remember it, and it will work real hard to remember it. But if you type it, it doesn't. If you just read it, it doesn't. So maybe consider getting a 3x5 card, write these out, just and run a test for a week or two, and just find out how often are your circuits on or off. And these questions will help you know whether your circuits are online or not. And you ask yourself, do I feel connected to the person you're talking to at that moment? Do I feel a desire to be connected to? Do I perceive this person as a relational being, or is this person an object to be used to my benefit? Am I aware of this person's true heart? Do I feel concern or compassion regarding what this person is thinking and feeling? And do I perceive his or her presence as a source of joy, as opposed to a problem to be solved or a resource to be used? And the big question is, am I glad to be with Tammy right now? And if I'm not, and she's behaving herself, then it's my problem. Now, she's over there having a bad day, and she's like spewing and sputtering, and I don't want to be with her. That just might mean I'm immature. My circuits might be on, but I don't have joy capacity to be able to interact with her at this moment, right? So, because remember what I said yesterday, our brains are constantly talking to each other, and we can't stop it. And if her brain's angry, and because I have a history of anger meaning pain in my life, and I've watched this in my life, when I can look at somebody and I know they're angry, my first tendency is to pull away from them because they're not safe. I'm going to get hurt. And that's because of my past. And so if I'm not in a good joy place and I look at her and I could tell she's madder than a wet hen, you can tell I live on a farm, I'm gonna not approach. But if I'm in gentle protector mode, my joy tank's full, and I've got history, and I know she's not gonna bite my head off. She might spew and sputter, but I'm gonna come close if she'll let me. Well, I'm gonna be watching for her hula hoop. We have a thing around here. We used to have all these different sized hula hoops we used to demonstrate. Different people have different sized hula hoops, and we are supposed to have healthy boundaries, and we put a hula hoop around us for that healthy boundary. And we should all have more than one hula hoop. I have one hula hoop around me that the only person I let in that hula hoop is the Lord. That's it. My next hula hoop's my husband, my children, grandchildren now with them. And then the next one are close friends. And then the next one are friends. Then the next one is people that are not safe, that I have to keep at a distance. That's legal. That's being, some people say, well, that's not Christ-like. Well, sorry, it is. You know, wise as a serpent, gentle as a dove. Let's be wise here. You don't purposely let perpetrators into your community. And we talked about that yesterday. You let a predator type personality that preys on the weak into your community, it will rob joy faster than air coming out of a balloon. And so predatory behavior, people that operate in predatory behavior on a regular basis that refuse to be teachable can't stay in a joy community. It's not good. We've done it. We've experienced it, and we've extended mercy, 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 grace, grace, you know, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then that person begins to propagate that skill in other people, and then you've got a big problem out of control, and it takes steel sheep, right? So make sure you have a healthy hula hoop, and you have healthy boundaries as well. Take care of you and take care of others. Both are important. So all those questions there are questions that are about your thoughts, emotions, attitudes, impulses that feel true. I'm going to go ahead and take that picture off of there because none of us are like that, and we don't want to be like that. That's much better. Let that one burn into your... So, everything with respect to your relational conflict will turn out better and flow more easily once you get your relational circuits back online. Don't try to do conflict resolution with your relational circuits off. It's a disaster. You'll have to have three more meetings if you do, or more, right? So if I have a foundation of a secure attachment, and relational connection to joy, both being anchored in memories from a lifetime of positive relational experiences. You could take out the word lifetime, and you could put from years of, because it takes some time to have these positive relational experiences impact you, with family, friends, and the Lord, then I will be able to stand on this foundation of emotional security and relational joy, even when I'm surrounded by people who are upset or attacking me. If you don't have that and you start getting hit, and you're going to probably go down. And you're going to start probably believing what they're saying or defending yourself till you're blue in the face. And, oh, it's just not pretty. So it's and you can see in this statement here how important the body of Christ is. You know, if you picture, Paul describes the church as a body. So here I am, a body. Christ is the head. Can you imagine a body walking around without a head? You know, it's not a pretty sight, and yet we try to do it. But he's the head, and then the body is made up of all these different members, and we're all different. Thank you, Lord, we don't have feet on our instead of hands up here. Ugh. Can you imagine having foot trying to do what our hands can do? We're all, and elbows and knees and backbones and neck, and we're all different, and we're all meant to work together. And as we learn how to do that, then we can have these secure attachments because we're working together. The eye is not more important than the foot, Paul says, right? We can't look at somebody else and say, oh, well, they're better than I am, or I wish I was. No. You are who Yahweh made you to be. He made you to be who you are, perfectly designed for what he's asked you to do and who he's called you to be, more importantly. And so this paragraph here, I think, ought to be highlighted and highlighted and highlighted, because this, I'm going to read it again. It's a big deal. It kind of pulls it all together for us. If I have a foundation of a secure attachment and I have relational connections to somebody is glad to be with me. That's what joy is. I have that relational connection. I know it's true. Someone's glad to be with me. And I'm being anchored in memories from times of positive relational experiences with family, friends, the church, and the Lord, then I will be able to stand on that foundation of emotional security and relational joy even when I'm surrounded by people who hate me or are against me. Just as traumatic content can come forward as implicit memory, positive content from these positive relational memories can also come forward as implicit memory. We haven't spent a lot of time on that because that's not a problem. So when you have a memory as a child that was happy, joy-filled, everybody's glad to be with you, and you went to on a family trip together, and so-and-so, I just thought of one. It just popped in my head. I'll use it as a live example. My sisters, I have three sisters, and I, for years, once a year, we took a sister trip together. A lot of fun. And we're all very different, and just as I'm sure yours, it's that true for your family. And so my oldest sister, who's not very expressive, she tends to be more quiet, etc., we were going down the road one day, and somebody made a comment about something, and we were all discussing it, and we thought, well, that's really fun, and we're laughing, and we're enjoying this whole discussion. And then all of a sudden, my sister, my oldest sister that hardly doesn't talk very often, there's finally a break in the conversation, because us other three sisters are pretty verbal, and we make up for her. And so my sister didn't talk. All of a sudden, we hear from the back of the van, she says, credit is due. And we go, oh, that's right. 30 minutes ago, she started the conversation. She made one sentence, and we took off with it, and we just exploded it and expounded on it, and then she just, credit where credit is due. And so to this day, that was probably 10 years ago or so, to this day, something will happen, and that memory comes flooding back. And the feelings that came with that when she said that, it was like she belonged with us, because that's been a struggle for her and us. She kind of isolates herself. And she belonged. And I can feel, even telling the story, I can feel it, all the emotions of when she did that. We were thrilled. We were so happy. And she just started laughing. And we all started laughing. That's right. You did it. It's your credit. We give you credit, you know. So we still pull that up, and I'll say it often just because of the emotions. That's implicit memory. First, I didn't remember. You know, you go on, and then my sisters and I were together, and we were talking about that day. One of them brought it up. Do you remember when? Oh, that's where that came from. Credit where credit is due, and all the feelings that came with it. So that is very common. For a positive implicit memory to come forward as well. Now, they don't tend to have the same tendency to be hidden, right? We usually hide the painful memories. So often you can it'll come as an explicit memory where you actually remember. Now I remember it fully. You know, I can pull it up and see the video. I can taste it almost. It's that real. So just know that that can happen as well. All right, let's go on now. Let's keep going. Secure attachment style. And we're going to, let's see, let's start here where it says, if I have a strong foundation of joy when others are accusing me and rejecting me, I will be able to say to myself, yeah, that's true, but my family and friends love me. They understand me. They're glad to be with me, and the Lord loves me, and he understands me, and he's glad to be with me. However, when we lose access to our relational connection circuits, we temporarily lose access to the resources in all of our relational connection memory bank accounts. It's like the bank gets closed, and all the ATMs, machines. Page 11. Look for ATM at the, or you see it? Everybody got it? Okay. I skipped a couple of paragraphs there because we'd already covered it. All right. So all the ATM machines are temporarily out of service. That's what it's like when you are triggered and you don't have access to those relational connection circuits and you don't have a secure attachment in place. When that happens, to the extent that our relational connection circuits are offline, we won't be able to feel the relational connection memories that are the source of secure attachments. We won't feel that I'm glad to be with you or someone's glad to be with me, relational connection. Fortunately, the Lord knows that we often lose access to those circuits, and he's provided a way for us to get them back online. He designed our brains so that perceiving that someone is glad to be with me in my pain, perceiving that this person is glad to be with me, and feeling that this person hears and understands my emotional upset will bring my relational connection circuits back online. If you have people in your life that know how to attune to you, people who are glad to be with you, then sharing your upset thoughts and emotions with one of those friends will bring your relational circuits back online. That's why it's so important to have two-way bonds and three-way bonds or four-way bonds so that you have that connection with people that you can trust, that you can go to in times of upset. For those of us who personally experience the Lord's presence, we can do this with Him. And this is especially good news because He's always available. He never sleeps or slumbers. And He's always happy to be with us. In fact, there are times when it seems like the Lord is the only one who can hear us, understand us, and be with us in this way. All right. I listed five, well, actually more than five. Let's look at these five tools that can help you get your relational circuits back online. You can, if you find yourself disconnected emotionally, you don't want to be connected, you know, your circuits are off, then you can think about a past positive experience with the Lord. An experience where you felt connected and that you were glad to be with Him. That, if you can get there, I love to use Psalm 23 for that. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He leads me, guides me, you know, and I will picture it. I'll put myself in that and feel it and let it come alive. And, man, you can't do that without your relational circuits coming online. You can't. I can't even get past the Lord is my shepherd without coming online. But you can practice that, and it will happen that quickly. It will happen quickly. Focus on appreciating His presence and the way He cared for you in the past experience. About half of King David's Psalms are various forms of appreciating the Lord's presence and His goodness. Man, King David had quite the relational circuit joy capacity. And look at all he had to go through. I'm reading through the book of Psalms right now, and over and over and over he's thanking the Lord for destroying his enemies, you know, and thanking Him and praising Him that He's not leaving him out in the wilderness with his enemies devouring him and so on. He was able to endure opposition, even from his own son trying to take the kingdom, because of his secure attachment with Yahweh. I remember the story where King David was fleeing Jerusalem because his son was going to kill him and take the throne. And the guy along the road that's throwing stones at him and calling him names, and his soldiers were like, let us kill him. I want to kill him. Can I kill him? You know, and David's like, leave him alone. Leave him alone. The Lord might be using this. And this guy just follows him, just throwing stones, calling him names. And David just, nope, leave him alone. He had a secure attachment, great big joy capacity, and he was able to stay true to who he was. Same with Saul trying to kill him, and Saul goes in a cave to use the bathroom, and King David happens to be in the cave first and goes up and cuts off the corner of his robe and lets King Saul stay alive. Amazing story to me. And then after Saul gets out of there and he's a little ways away, David steps out of the mouth of the cave and waves the corner of his robe up in the air and says, Saul, King Saul, why are you trying to kill me? I could have killed you. Do you see this? And I didn't. And again, that shows his capacity for being relational and staying true to Yahweh and not becoming Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Staying true to who Yahweh had made him to be, and that was a king. He acted like a king then. So anyway, that's just a couple examples. After appreciation has prepared your brain, mind, and spirit for connecting with the Lord, invite Him to come be with you, especially in any negative thoughts and emotions that still remain, and ask him to help you perceive his presence. Open your heart to him. Look into your heart and identify the thoughts and emotions you find there. Not the thoughts and emotions you know you ought to have, but the thoughts and emotions that are actually there. Once you identify what's in your heart, describe it to Yeshua as clearly, honestly, vulnerably, and humbly as possible. This is also very biblical. The other half of David's Psalms are examples of this type of prayer. Once you feel connected, and you want to be connected, when you experience Yahweh and others as relational beings, when you're aware of each other's true hearts, when you feel compassionate, concerned about others, when you perceive each other as sources of joy, and you're glad to be together, I can guarantee that you will be more able to resolve any conflict that comes. All right? Here's some more things, some helpful hints, so to speak, to help you get your relational circuits and build healthy relationship. Number one, don't focus on the person who hurt you. That's the worst thing you can do, is focus on the person who triggered you. And maybe they did hurt you. Maybe they did. Maybe what they did was wrong. And maybe you're triggered because they were wrong. Maybe they weren't. It doesn't matter. Don't focus on the person. When talking to the Lord about your pain, it's important that you focus on yourself. Especially focus on the painful thoughts that feel true and the negative emotions you're experiencing. If you focus on the person that you're upset with, and describing to the Lord all the reasons why they are bad and wrong, that's definitely way less productive. And he's liable to tell you, excuse me, that's my daughter you're talking about, like he did me. Right? The next one, talk about your pain. It can be important to tell the Lord about your anger as part of your feeling that you are getting to express all of your negative emotions and feeling that the Lord is hearing you. But in most situations, it's helpful to then, after you've done that, move on from talking about your anger or pain, your anger, and then talk about your pain. There are some exceptions, but in most situations, we use feeling angry and talking about anger as a defense to protect ourselves from feeling more painful negative emotions, such as shame, powerlessness, sadness, despair, etc. There's no room for self-pity. Choosing to indulge in self-pity or bitterness can block receiving attunement from the Lord or anybody else, which blocks you from regaining access to your relational circuits. Remember, it's all about being in His presence. I find it helpful to keep reminding myself that my goal is to perceive the Lord's presence, tell Him about my pain, and to feel that He hears me, understands me, and is with me. My goal is not to fix the problem that's upsetting me, or even to find and resolve the underlying trauma. Neither is it to justify that I'm right and that person's wrong, right? But my goal is to perceive the Lord's presence. Be aware. It's helpful to be aware of the possibility that triggered underlying trauma, implicit memories, may be contributing to your upset. Finally, in situations where I'm having an especially difficult time getting my relational circuits back online, I put all of these tools together. And this can take a significant amount of time and energy, especially if I'm in a bad mood and not feeling thankful, and not really wanting to be relational. If that's the case, the appreciation exercise, being thankful, expressing it, is particularly challenging when you're in that mood, right? Yeah. But it's really worth it. And try to tell yourself, it's going to be worth it. I don't want to be thankful right now, but I'm going to be. Right. You know, that's the thing about being thankful. You don't have to really feel it, right? It's a verb. It's an action word. Just do it. You know, we had to use that Nike thing. Just do it. I wish I had the appreciation slide up there right now. All right, I'm not going to do read the review. I'm going to let you all read that when you're reading your booklet at home. Yeah, microphone, please.
Well, just the power of appreciation and thankfulness when you're not feeling it at all. Right before I came to the farm, I was at my mom's for a little bit, and one thing I was doing is cleaning the bathroom, you know, regular, just different things. And this one particular day, everything in me, or that weekend or whatever, was just like, ugh, I just can't. Like, I don't feel like it. You know, like, I'm just not in the mood I want to, of course, bless my mom. I'm thankful, but my soul and my spirit, everything was like, I just can't, I don't even, oh dear, you know? So I remembered the power of gratitude that I was taught a long time ago. And so I just started, I took the rag and the bottle, you know, I'm thankful for the rag in my hand, you know, that I don't have a leaf, you know? And I'm thankful for the squirt bottle that works. I don't have to pour it out. You know, I'm thankful for, you know, I mean, just the light that works that I'm not cleaning in the dark. I just went from, I'm thankful for the toilet. You know, I'm thankful that we have a toilet. I'm thankful for the tile. Well, I'm thankful for the person who put in this toilet. And I'm thankful for the paint on the wall. I'm thankful for the person who painted this bathroom. And, boy, I'm thankful. And I just kept going. I just kept going. And before I know it, I'm thankful. Would you bless that family, whoever the people were that painted this place? And would you just, I just pray for them. And I just kept going and going, and before I knew it, I had no clue I was cleaning the bathroom. I was just being thankful and gratitude and praying, and it just entered in. Before I knew, I was done with the bathroom, and I was in such a great mood, and it changed my whole countenance and my attitude, and I just was like so just like in this whole different place. I mean, within just a little bit, I'll never forget the power of just doing it, even when we're not feeling it.
That's good.
Boy, you just tapped into that implicit memory of you doing that, and explicit. It's just bubbling on you. Yeah. So I also want to highlight the whole secure attachment piece of this. That is like the foundation, right? That knowing that you belong, knowing that someone's glad to be with you, secure attachment. It creates that. And as you can see there, that's some big joy right there. That's Sarah and Juliana in the back of that truck. And then here we have another picture of some of our farm folks enjoying each other and doing life together. Long time ago. That one's going way back in the years. So, and then let's keep going with some more secure attachment pictures here. And joy. We've already seen a few of those. All right. So fun. Let's get to a stopping place. We'll have a break here in a minute. All right, we're at a great stopping place. Let's take a break. You guys want some coffee? I don't know if you